The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guest do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Hey, it's Chris Fleming. Listen to Dave and Mike on Odyssey Files, because if you don't, you're going to get abducted. Ah, that didn't work.
Oh! Kim, what are you doing?
Well, I'm telling Mike and Dave, it's time to get on the show.
Oh, well, the Odyssey Files starts now.
Here we come. And good evening, Para-X. You are listening to the Odyssey Files. And it is Monday night at 7 o'clock. And I'm your host, Michael O'Neill. With me, as always, is Mr. Dave Soaring. Good evening, Dave.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Ooh, Michael, you brought out the full name.
I did.
Did I do something wrong?
No, that's respect.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
My apologies for the loud laugh I just did.
I had a good weekend, so I'm just, you know, I'm carrying forward on my good weekend. So
excellent.
Yes.
And it is only going to get better because we have a phenomenal guest tonight,
yes,
Mr. Ken Bogle.
Did you
just fall over?
The chair flipped backwards. I was head over heels. I immediately regrouped and I'm back up and I'm okay. So I appreciate the concern, but I'm good. I'm back with us.
Oh, I thought, okay. Cause it was funny because my Skype, I had it minimized. So I just had the small box that had the person talking in it.
Yeah.
And all I heard was this commotion and I thought it was Ken because you hadn't, like, it just switched over. And so I was asking Ken if he had fallen over, and then all of a sudden you're like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, whoa.
No,
I had the wrong person.
It was me. I jammed my knee into the corner of the desk, and the whole thing shook, and it kind of sounded like that. So, yeah, that was me. Sorry.
Gotcha. Okay, Ken Bogle. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. And let me just start by thanking you for once again making me very, very popular on Twitter.
Oh, shit. Oh, sorry, my language. Sorry. Sorry, Para-X. Dang. No, well, you know how important being popular on Twitter is, you know?
I do.
I'm so glad but, I can help like, you with that.
No, yeah, you did, because, again, it was, you know, I might have, I don't know, 3-4 likes a week, something like that. And I'm like, hey, Ken Bogle's coming on my show. And, you know, I log in now. I was like, you have 20 notifications.
So basically what you're saying here is I'm Twitter bait. That's basically.
I was suckling off the Bogle tweet, so to speak.
So to speak. I like the way you worded that.
I had a question that came to mind, I think yesterday, and I'll tell you why I'm asking this. Dave and I were trying to get a guest on, and we hadn't really talked to her or anything, and then we got word that she was going to be on another paranormal show, so we're like, hey, why don't we listen in and see what she's like, you know, get a feel for how she is as a guest. And we turned it on, and I kid you not, I think the host talked about promos and advertisements and everything for like 15 minutes while she was just sitting there not saying a word. I like to get to my guest as soon as possible, so I'm just curious how long you've ever had to wait, like just sitting there listening to them talk before you've been able to actually get on.
30 minutes.
Oh, no way.
Now, just a moment.
Let's I don't need any names or shows. Don't need any names.
Well,
or
I wasn't going to give them. I wasn't going to give them. Okay. But you should know, for those listening at home. Hello, listeners. For those listening at home, you should know that your friend Ken Bogle hates patience. I'm not a patient person. And if you make me wait 30 minutes, you can guarantee I'm saying terrible, awful things about you with the microphone on mute. To many people via Twitter, private messages, I'm sending texts to paranormal celebs saying this, you know, effing mess, you know, like I'm not having a good time. I hate doing that because what that does is it clarifies the fact that you're not there to be interviewed. What you're there to do is to promote someone who wants to be better for themselves for the sake of what they're doing. Right.
Amen.
It proves that the guest in that situation is not important. Now, I have waited for 30 minutes to be interviewed for 2 whole hours. So that sort of balances, you know. Yeah. But in the end, I still hate that, too, because I don't like doing 2 hours. You know, I'm not, you know, a rock band. You know, I'm not going to sit here for 2 hours for free. Forget it, you know.
I don't blame you.
But I also charge money for my time. I mean, you all don't pay me because, you know, you're great to work with and all these other things. And I don't charge for doing podcast stuff. But if you're going to make me wait for 30 minutes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're lucky you don't receive an invoice.
There you go. I would agree.
You know all about an invoice, though, Michael.
I do. I do indeed. So the reason why Ken is saying that is because last week I got a session from Mr. Bogle. So.
Yeah, it was amazing. I enjoyed it.
I'm not sure how Mike felt about it, because I asked him, I said, so how did it go? Because he told me, he's like, yeah, so I finally got that reading from Ken, and I said, well, how did it go? You know? Like I thought it would. Yeah, and that was it. That's all he said. That was the whole entire conversation. So I'm like,
it's
yeah, well, I'm guessing that a lot of the things that might have been said he didn't want to hear, or they were a little too on, spot on, or something along those lines, or something. Who knows? But
no, I think with his, it was more like confirming what he already knew, which a lot of readings turn out that way. Confirming what he already knew, and then pushing him to be real, and honest, and open. That's basically what we did for 30 minutes. It was for 45. Or I don't remember how long we were on. I really don't remember, but
it was 45, because the first five was the normal. How you doing, Ken? Oh, I'm doing the basic chit chat before we got into the dirty stuff.
That's right. Which he pays extra for. He pays extra for the dirty stuff, but
but Mike's okay with that. He doesn't mind.
Right.
Yeah. No.
The good stuff. The juicy stuff. Yeah.
If I can throw in that extra tip for wow, that did come out the way I wanted it to. I'm sorry. I'm just going to skip that whole sentence.
Smart part. Smart. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well done.
I don't do a lot of smart things, but I think that's one of them. So again, obviously last time that you were on, Dave wasn't able to attend. So, you know, my co-host was Jim. And so I know Dave has a bunch of questions for you. So why don't you just dig right in, Dave?
Okay. So I'm just kind of curious, and you touched on it a little bit in the last interview when you had with Mike and Jim. But I'm kind of curious, I don't know a lot about tarot. So from your perspective, I would like you to enlighten me on kind of what tarot means to you, what tarot readings mean to you. Maybe kind of the history of them, like how far back do they actually go? And going back in time, then were they used for the same purpose that they're used for today? Or has things kind of changed a little bit because our society has changed, times have changed?
Okay, well, I'm going to see if I can hit every one of those questions if I can remember. So don't repeat them. Let me see if I can retain that information. Okay, so history of tarot. Lots of people think it started in Europe, and this is they think somewhere in the 1500s.
Okay.
But it started as a card game, they say. Now, recently I've read some information that says no, it all started in the Middle East years and years and years before it ever came to Europe, but that it was not a card game there. It was actually used by prophets and things like this. So I don't think anyone really knows how far the tarot goes back itself. But you know, using a tool of divination has gone back since, you know, human beings received consciousness. I think we've always wanted to know what comes next. Right. You know, what can we do? What happens? So, you know, the idea of it being a divination tool, I'm going to say, goes back before the 1500s just because of the recent information I was made privy to. Now, for me, myself, I mean, okay, so have they been used the same way since that happened? No, they haven't, because they did become a card game that aristocrats played in the 1500s, I think, in Italy and such. So then
let me jump in there for a second. I don't mean to interrupt you, but when you say card game, are you talking like a card game like Pinochle or poker or gin rummy, like that Rook. Kind of card game?
Yeah, like Rook. Rook. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
They'd sit around and, you know, drink wine, eat grapes, and, you know, fool around and play tarot, like the card game or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, I saw some kind of a YouTube video where someone was talking that Marie Antoinette had actually used the tarot as a card game. So I don't know if that's true, because, you know, you can't put anything on YouTube if it's factual. You know,
well, that's true. Right. Correct.
So anyway, so yeah, that's that. Now, for me, I have always used them as a tool to sort of figure life out, you know, because from time to time, even my world gets really, really clouded. Now, I don't read for myself. I go to other readers to read me. But in the grand scheme of things, it remains true to what it is for me and has always remained true. I've never looked up the rules on how you play it as a card game. You know, I've never done that. But what I have done is I've used it in ways of writing, which apparently there have been a lot of books and lectures and things written using the tarot. You know, there's been like a lot of short stories written, a lot of poetry written using the tarot and things. So it has all altered and changed and evolved, I think, over the course of the centuries that it's been used. So hope I hit all those questions.
Yeah, you did. And so now that with your answers, I'm going to elaborate a little bit. So when you say like writings have come from the tarot, do you mean that they were used as like inspiration to write short stories and inspiration to write poetry?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what I thought you meant. I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page with that. Cause that's interesting. I mean, like really famous stuff.
You know, I can't recall anything offhand. I can't recall like any sort of, but look it up. But like, there's also, you know, people have been using the occult and spirits. I'm using quotation marks for listeners at home. Spirits, contacting spirits to kind of do literature and things like this as well. And even science. Didn't Tesla have a spirit guide that he spoke to? Someone said the other day that Tesla had. That it kind of came to him in spirit messages. I don't know, but I do know that it's really, really great. Now, I've not written anything fictional using the tarot. In a blog that I used to do, which I need to do again, and in the biography, my autobiography, the biography I've been writing for a while, I use the tarot to kind of go through my life, because the tarot really is a journey. You know, going from the fool to the world and then back to the fool, you know, to complete, you know, your cycles of life. So I've been using it in that way. So it's a remarkable tool to do that. It's just phenomenal, the kind of information you can get and the plot structures you can get. And even the way I'm using it, the clarity it brings to the situations in your past, you maybe, you know, don't even recall clearly, or you don't know how to process it in written form without some kind of a guide. And it's been really good to help me do that.
Okay. So, and the only reason I ask you this is only because I've heard so many different things. So from your perspective, is there anything that using the tarot has any type of inherent danger? If you maybe using it improperly or you know, and kind of explain that. So, I mean, if the answer is yes, then I guess why? If the answer is no, then I guess kind of why too? You know, because this is a powerful... I mean, this is kind of like, you know, when Mike and I walk into an investigation and we use our, you know, we use our sixth sense, we use our, you know, third eye, we're walking into a place, we can fit, you know, I can feel energy in a room, and we try to discern if it's good, if it's bad, if it's, you know, should we be really careful at this location, or is it just somebody who wants to talk because they've got a story to tell? So, you know, from our perspective, we run into good and bad all the time. So, I mean, is that something similar to what you run into, or is that not part of it?
Well, there's inherent danger in three different ways.
Okay.
So the first is blatant danger, which is that people have used tarot to do black magic and dark arts and things like this. So okay. that has been a thing. And obviously there's inherent danger in doing that.
Correct.
Then the other way that it's possibly dangerous is, you know, you could be speaking to someone who isn't mentally prepared, isn't mentally strong. They may be very susceptible to various imagery found in the cards. You know, they may take away pieces of what they thought you said and then, you know, really mess their lives up. You got to make sure that the person you're reading is intelligent, can grasp what you're saying, and is strong-willed enough to know that they can make changes in their life based on what you're revealing.
Okay.
You know, and then... Yeah.
As he smiled at Mike when he said that, because then Mike's looking at me going, yeah, no, that isn't how I felt at all. That was not how that 45 minutes went.
Completely the opposite. Completely the opposite. I thought he was describing me perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, Ken. Go ahead.
And then, like, the third danger in it is that you can cause a lot more harm than you can good if you're trying to contact spirits and you don't have the gift of discernment. So if I'm doing a spirit reading and I feel that there's something negative that's giving me this information, or I feel that the information itself is coming from a dark place, I stop.
Okay.
You know, and I push back from the table and we go no further. So if your reader doesn't have that ability, there does lie some kind of danger in that. So you got to know where your information is coming from, or at least the influence of it. Is it evil, good, okay, dark, or light? You know, that kind of a thing.
Okay. So have you ever had that happen to you? I mean, have you ever done? I shouldn't say ever, because that's kind of a broad way to say it. But I mean, has there been like a recent, maybe, I guess would be a better way to say it, or like as you've perfected your skill set, have you run into kind of a moment when all of a sudden you were like, wait a minute, I don't feel comfortable where this information is coming from, you know? And was it something you realized right away, or did you have to kind of go for a little bit and then all of a sudden something clicked and you went, wait a minute, I gotta step back here for a second and really take a look at what's happening here?
Well, it's happened quite a lot.
Oh, okay.
It's happened a lot. there was a time when I was reading for a woman who wanted to speak to her mother, and her mother was a really evil, horrible woman.
Okay.
And so I had to back off from that. And there was another time that a young lady thought, and I never ask, where are you, you know, when I'm reading your tarot. But she thought it was going to be a great idea to get her reading done in a cemetery.
Mm, yeah.
Like
maybe,
a real
maybe
idiot.
Not. Yeah, maybe yeah, not a good idea.
Like a real idiot would do something like that. So I stopped that too, you know, because the information that was coming through was very contradictory, and it felt very sneaky, and it felt very wolf in sheep's clothing. So, sure. You know, whenever you get that, the least little tinge of, okay, this doesn't seem right, I stop. That's just the way it rolls. And everybody has to agree to that whenever we do a spirit contact reading. You know, I tell you, if this happens, I stop, and you're going to have to respect that. And if they say, yeah, then we keep going. If they say no, then I don't even shuffle the cards.
Okay.
Yeah. So
two kind of questions with that one. So one, let's say you want to learn how to do tarot. How do you figure out or realize or how do you develop the gift of discernment? And then the second question is, as a person who is getting a reading, how do you know that the person who is reading you understands the concept of discernment?
Now, look, that's a very good question. Okay. I think, dang, boo, why would you lay that on me? I didn't expect that to be such a brilliant question. So, okay, look, I think that discernment is a gift from God. You know, I think that's a gift from God. Also, I think it is tunable or developed further by spending time in prayer and spiritual states of grace. I think that you blatantly need to ask your reader right off the bat, do you know where your information is coming from when you do a spiritual reading? Do you know the difference between light and dark? You should ask. If they're not talking to you about that, if your reader's not offering you that information, then you need to ask. But every reader should, if you're new to them right off the bat and you're doing a spiritual reading like that, they should talk to you about that. That only makes sense to me. I don't know why someone wouldn't do that. So, you know, I'd talk to your reader about it. But for me, it's been something that, like, you know, I spend 45 minutes in the morning in my prayer room and then 45 minutes in the evening in my prayer room, you know? Like, I spend a lot of time trying to hone myself to the frequency of positivity and light. So anytime something dips or something brings me down from that, I know to start being careful right off the bat. So, you know, that's how I developed it. That's how I figured it out. And, you know, I hope to God that you're talking to your reader about, you know, what they feel their information's coming from. And, you know, are we speaking to Satan? You know what I mean? Like, it seems like a good question.
Right. So,
of course, Zach Baggins would say yes. Yes, we're talking to the devil himself.
Well, of course.
That'll be $155, but whatever.
Right. So, when you run across a situation like that, let's just go back to, you were talking about the young lady that you had, where her mom was an extremely, like, evil, dark person, okay? An evil, dark human entity is not anything to do with Satan or demonic or anything like that. It's just a very bitter, very dark. And not to say that that person somewhere down the road can't transgress into something more, right? I mean, they could. I don't know that answer, but so my question is, based on that, on what you said about that, is is there a real world possibility of harm coming from a reading, either to you as the reader, if you don't shut it down, or to your client that you're reading?
Yeah, yeah. But see, the thing is, you have to realize that demons and devils don't come. They don't always come as inhuman entities right off the bat. They don't. There are enough demons and devils in every day-to-day life. Right. You know, understanding that the demons will drain your energy and your light, the devils will drain your life, that you run into these people all the time. You know, Charles Manson was a horrible devil. You know what I mean? Hitler was a terrible devil.
Right.
So, you know, they live and breathe in human form. I think what you're saying is, you know, do those human spirits then have potential to cause spiritual harm in passing after they've passed during a reading? And the answer to that is yes.
Okay.
Because had I talked to the young lady about her mother, seeing how the mother was presenting herself to me, and I had pushed myself further than I was comfortable with, goodness only knows what that mother would have said. And it could have caused real damage to her emotionally, mentally, spiritually, you know, that would have probably festered and caused other deeper spiritual problems. So, yeah, there's a real danger to it. So you have to be very quick and sharp about making sure you nip it as soon as it starts to happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, am I supposed to pop in here?
I've burned through about half of my questions. We're halfway through the show, so I figured you might want to chime in more than just once or twice.
No, first half
show's
all you.
You got anything for him, or do you want me to go? Or?
Well, no. Well, I do have a lot of stuff for him, but it deals with what we're going to talk about in the second half of the show. So
okay.
I'm just going to chime in here when I have certain questions, but I don't know if it's going to be a quick answer, and I don't know if it's going to be a long answer. So I'm kind of just going to
throw them in there and see what happens.
Well, it's a completely different subject, so okay. I figured we would stop or continue on this one because I'm liking this conversation. So I'm just sitting back and enjoying. That's all. I'm a listener right now. Continue
all
on.
All right, I got it then. So
I mean, just like let's stay in that one vein real quick. Let's stay in that one thing because there's one aspect of that I wasn't very clear about. There are sometimes I knowingly go into a dark place. There are sometimes I knowingly do that because if someone says to me, Ken, there's something evil in my house, I have to prepare myself. I go through my ritual. I go through my process. You know, I'm contacting, you know, my angels, my protectors and things. So I do sometimes go in there anyway, because if you come to me for help and I am prepared for it. It's a lot different than just being open and then something presenting itself that way out of the blue that just kind of side swipes, you know, or
knocks you in the face. Yeah.
Blindside, thanks you.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so that's a thing. But yeah, I have done that before. One of my clients, one of my favorite clients, her name is Michelle Kubot. She will contact me before she goes on an investigation. And she will say to me, you know, what do you feel about this investigation? And I often am prepared to go to someplace dark because she goes to some humdingers. I'm telling you, she goes to some real scary places. Yeah.
So I'm that actually brought up exactly my main question for the show for you. Yes. Great transition, Ken. It's like you're reading my mind. Okay, so... as I've stated many, many times on the show, I'm a big fan of Amy Allen and the Dead Files. Mm-hmm. And I know that I've mentioned this to Dave at least once, maybe twice. The things that she sees and sees and figures out about what's going on in a home. That's a gift that a lot of mediums, you know, such as yourself have, which is what I'm assuming this paranormal investigator comes to you for.
Mm-hmm.
How, if you do not have access to a Ken Bogle or an Amy Allen on your team or just in general, how as a paranormal investigator are you supposed to figure out like what is going on at home to help a family when it's like, you know, black vines coming up a house or something like that? How are you supposed to figure that out as a paranormal investigator if you don't have access to those gifts?
I think everybody is inherently born with the ability to know light from dark. Like
I would agree.
I fail to believe if you're involved in the paranormal industry or paranormal investigating, I fail to believe that you don't know the difference. Now, okay, say you're real green. Okay, say you're real green. You're not hip. You're not clear about what you're doing. Yeah, you just saw something on Sci-Fi Channel or Destination or what have you. And you think, oh, wonderful, I'm going to totally do this. You need to rely on your evidence then and the data you collect. You know what I mean? If you're getting sort of educate yourself. If you're getting telltale signs of certain activity, back off. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're not able to understand it, conceive of it, and deal with it, then you shouldn't really even be doing what you're talking about. You really, really shouldn't. You know, you're doing something that's so gray that you have to go in prepared for every eventuality there could possibly be. You know, so you don't have an Amy Allen, you don't have a Ken Bogle, you don't have a Kim Russo or what have you, but you're born with the ability to know when you're up against something that ain't right. There's physical things that happen to you, or maybe I've been so this way my whole life and it maybe just happens to me, but when there's something dark and evil, everything within me drops. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it's like the pressure just swoops, just washes over me. The hair on every piece of me stands up and I feel danger. It's the same thing that a Neanderthal would have felt if there was a cougar in the cave. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So you know when something ain't right. You know what I'm saying? And if you are possessed with that ability and you don't have someone on your team who has that ability, then you really should not be doing what you're doing.
So, I mean, I wasn't exactly talking about light and dark. Like, I agree that 100% agree that you should be able to tell the difference of is there something good here, is there something bad. But I'm talking about, like, specifically. Like, how are you supposed to know there's like four spirits in your house and this person was a former owner or there's some sort of like elemental creature trying to suck the life out of you? Like, I mean, how are you supposed to specifically so you can figure out a solution to the problem?
Well, you know, honestly, I'm going to tell you, I think it's best to have a medium with you. I think it's best to have a medium on your team. I think it's, you know, would I have a trance medium? Maybe. Would I have a regular psychic in some situations? But I would prefer a regular, well-rounded medium in someone who's going to feel more than talk, someone who's going to experience more than expound, someone who's going to take in what is happening around them, you know, and convey that to the team, you know. I think you should have one. So if you don't have one, and I don't know how on earth you would do that. I just don't know how on earth you would possibly come up with some of the things, those details of this is a previous owner. She died of pneumonia. You know, she's in the bathroom doing her makeup. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you would come up with that.
Right.
So, yeah. Does that answer your question? Mr. McNeil, does that answer your question? Mr. O'Neill?
Yeah.
Sir?
I was going to say.
Mr. McNeil. Oh. That just made me think of, like, McDonald's. No, it's just. I don't know why, like, the Big Mac popped into my head when you said that. So, sorry.
It was like double quarter pounder. My God. Give me life.
My God.
Yes.
Well, that's my nickname, double quarter pounder.
Double quarter pounder. With cheese. Got to have the cheese.
I heard that about you.
It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who you've been talking to.
It was on a bathroom wall in Georgia. It was something about that.
I have been to Georgia.
Yeah.
that's kind of what I thought that you were going to that was going to be the answer to that question. So follow up question: are you looking for any teams?
I'm always happy. I'm always happy to be with people on their teams. I refuse to join one, but. Because the inter team dynamic is wrought with peril, in drama that I am not the kind of person who puts up with that. Like if Kim Boggle were on a team, and somebody was talking out of the corner of their mouth, it would stop in 2.2 seconds, and then everybody would be fired or quit, and then I would be alone. Right, like that's what would happen. So I often go with teams to do things, but I never join the team. You know what I mean? So if you're ever in the area, if you'd like for me to come by, I would totally do that.
That'd be sweet. And I was going to say, if we ever happened to have extra money and bought you a plane ticket and we were going to do like an event in Minnesota, I'm just.
Absolutely that.
Throwing that out there, the Urban would be great.
Contact Lindsay Center at Center States Events.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm way ahead of you on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Center with an S, she's on not a
speed,
C.
Yeah. Yeah, she's on speed email right now for me.
Yeah.
Although, just really quick before we go to commercial, I had gone through you directly to schedule this, and then I was about to post on Friday. I was about to post the promo for this, and I'm like, oh crap! I'm like, I haven't even let Lindsay know that I scheduled this. I'm like, I don't know if I did something wrong. I'm like, she's going to be pissed. And so I send her a quick email. I'm like, I don't know if I broke protocol or anything. I'm like, but I was getting a reading from Ken. I kind of scheduled him for an interview. I'm like, is that okay? I'm like, I just want to know that you make sure that you know this, that I did this. And she's like, that's perfectly fine.
She's so great, though. Like, and sometimes I say things that I know just upset her terribly. Like, I know it. Like, I constantly text her with things that are just like, that girl's totally going to lose it. She's going to fire you. Like, you're never going to work in this industry if you keep upsetting your manager the way you do. But just, like, weird stuff about how I'm not allowed at a Red Roof Inn. Various different hotel chains. I'm now persona non grata. Things like this. And she's like... Who have you pissed off this week, Ken? What did you say on Twitter? That kind of a thing. Yeah, bless her heart. She's great people. She tolerates a lot.
All right. Before we go to commercial, how the hell do you piss off the Red Roof Inn chain of hotels?
Due to the legal agreement, I'm no longer allowed to discuss that.
Okay. Okay. Well, fair enough. We'll accept that as your answer.
And the fact that there's multiple... It seems to be multiple hotel chains.
Yeah. Super 8. They're not leaving the light on for you, I'm assuming, right?
That was Motel 6.
Motel 6, whatever. Yeah, they're not leaving the light on for you either. Yeah, they see you drive by, they just shut everything down. Yeah.
Tom Bodette was a liar.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Millennials have no idea what we're just talking about, that Motel 6. They had no idea.
Oh, Ken, it's so wonderful that you think millennials listen to my show. all right. We are going to... What?
Nothing. Oh. I was just going to say, I don't think there's many millennials in the audience for this show, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I said. I go, it's cute.
I bring millennials, guys. Don't worry. There are millennials here.
Okay.
They're there.
All right. Hi, millennials.
They're around us, Dave. They're around us.
Oh my god.
All right, we're gonna go to commercial break and then we're gonna come back and talk about tarot date. So you are listening to the Odyssey Files on Para X.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear...
Line?
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Oh. UFOs. Bigfoot. Cryptid.
All I sit on the corner. Just think it's you listening to the words of Para X.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Saint, and you're listening to Mike and Dave, my fourth favorite paranormal radio show, guys. Duo? Guys. Whatever, it doesn't matter. They're moving up in the ladder. And I love you.
And we're back. And it was funny because right during the commercial break, we had like 10 seconds left and my phone starts ringing. And not my cell phone where I could just like mute it. So right now it's like underneath my thigh, like still ringing. So
is it your happy place or is it on vibrate or what?
No, it was the most insulated place I could find.
Okay. All right. Well, so, I'm happy with that response.
I think they're leaving a message. So anyway, yeah, my phone rings like once a month. So hey, why not right during a show? Anyways, so we're going to talk about tarot date.
Yeah.
Date. I think it's a day. So date. Well, you called me McNeil, so I can screw up with right. one of your yeah. names too.
Why not?
So we were talking before the show about that you're now in the second season on The Haunted Space. With tarot date. So now for those, and I don't know why anybody listening wouldn't know, like what you are doing with that. Why don't you just give a quick overview or a quick summary of what tarot date is?
Well, tarot date is a show. It's an hour long on the Vidi Space Network where I read tarot for people. They have questions they come to me with and I provide them clarity, guidance, and answers using the tarot. Sometimes we've gone to places that have been very unexpected and those episodes are no longer available.
Uh-oh.
Due to legal reasons.
Would that be the Red Roof Inn?
No.
Oh, okay.
That would be some no, crap. No, that right there is some boy band J-Ho from England that we totally busted on a couple of things. And I, you know, we won't involve you all in it. But anyway, long story came around that we had to take that episode down, and that's a thing. So yeah, but anyway, Tarot Date is just that. It is being able to sit in on an hour long, intense tarot reading with someone. Now, in season one, we went to people's homes. I would fly in, and I'd get picked up and dropped off, and picked up and dropped off, and you know, picked up and dropped off at someone's house, and then I would do the reading, and then I'd go back to the hotel, and I'd go get back on a plane. This year, we're not doing that. We're not doing that this year. This year, this season, they've made me a producer of the show, and my vision is to not let people be in the comfort of their own homes. I think that's bogus. We should put them in a hot seat. Let's get rid of all of the cats in the background, all the ringing telephones, all of this false security you have because you're in your own home, and then let me get you. You know what I mean? Like, let me get this, you know, because people have a tendency of like really hiding the truth if they know they're secure, you know, and you are off balance because you're in their house, you know. So this year we're not doing that. This year we're going to have a studio or I'm not sure where we're going to do it, but because there's some real difficult things happening in pre-production of Tarot Date. But we're going to bring people in outside of their norm, and we're going to read their tarot for an hour, and it's going to be amazing.
Should be like some old abandoned warehouse with like that whole like U.S. Russian Cold War light in your face. You just sit in the dark and say, this is what I see. And just like have that like just soft, like stern voice where you're not happy about anything, even though you might be, you know, and then see how they react.
Well, initially, it was all going to be done in a blacked-out studio with a singular light.
There's my concept, right? So the same kind of concept almost,
that's
right?
That's the way it was going to go. And because certain things fell through, we're now without a location to do it. But we have some ideas. You know, I've talked to Elizabeth Saint about it. We think we have an even better location than what I was hoping to have. We just really have to see where that goes, because we were really messed over this season, by, you know, just the situation trying to get it in production has been a monster. It's been hard.
Okay. So let's change it just for a quick second here. So it's a little something more positive for you, because I can see distress on your face. So
yeah, thank you.
Okay. So the guests that you're bringing on, are they a mixture of just like housewives and common people and maybe some celebrities, or are they just like all movie stars, or are they all paracelebs, or I mean, what's your kind of like clientele?
Everyday people.
Okay.
Like privately, well, you know, I do readings. They're more than anything, they're usually, you know, everyday people with a great mix of celebrities in there. But for the show, it's everyday people, because okay. I think that's what's most important. I think being able to look at everyday people who are going through what we're going through and recognizing it in each other and sitting down and saying, okay, now wait a minute, that lady, you know, in Minnesota is going through the same thing I'm going through here in Maryland. You know what I mean? Or wherever you're at in the world. And maybe the advice he's giving her can actually help me. And it often does. It often really does. So, you know, that's what we want to do. We really didn't want it to be anything sort of super huge where you had these big, huge names. We would love to have them. And when we were in pre-production, we were going to have some in season two, but all the dates and things kind of fell through. So we lost them. But I think at the end of the day, having everyday people seen by everyday people is what makes a difference in everybody's life. You know what I mean? Because there's a connection there, you know? So there's more it's more relatable, I think.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And that's the answer I was kind of hoping you were going to give me, that it wasn't just going to be a bunch of pretentious Hollywood movie stars, you know, it was going to be your common housewife or husband, wife who are experiencing some really trauma or something in their lives that is really affecting them negatively and they need to move on. So
I would say, though, the real difference between the, you know, just as off subject real quick, just a side note, the real difference between when I'm reading for celebrities versus when I'm reading for everyday people is the level of extreme. the celebrities don't do things. They do the same things we do, but they do it to such an absurd extreme. You know, if they're going to be addicted to something, it's not going to be shopping, you know, it's right. going to, you know, they're going to be or, you know, we, by the time it's over, they're at this Mount Cedar Sinai or something. Right. They've got a room at the Betty Ford.
Right.
That's, you know, they're not just having one affair. They're sex addicts. Do you know what right. I mean? Like they, right. they have this hunger that just, you know, bless them. I mean, I do the best I can by them, but sometimes it really is me saying to them, you've got to get your head out of it. You know what I mean? Like you're right up your, I'm trying to watch my mouth. So, right. you know what I mean? Like you're drowning in your own, you're drowning in your own ego and your own extremism, and it's causing your life to fall apart. That is the huge difference. And I don't think people in everyday people can look at that and really connect with it. Do you know what I mean? Cause we are extreme to ourselves, but it in no way, shape or form relates to some of the things I've dealt with in New York or LA or something like that.
No, I would agree. Yeah. I would imagine. I mean, yeah.
So how do you choose the people? Do they come to you? I mean, do they go on like the Vidi Space website and like, I would like to submit myself for, you know, a tarot date with Ken.
Well, this season I've handpicked them. This season I picked them. Now, what happened?
And yet I sit here.
Well yeah, you're not in the filming area, the local filming area. Because we're not traveling this year, we're trying to get everybody kind of central. And it's been more about what I think people who are watching the Vidi Space would connect to. You know, so this season we're going to talk about real people with real issues. There's going to be anxiety. There's going to be depression. There's going to be loneliness. There's going to be heartbreak. But we're also going to talk to psychics. We're also going to talk to intuitives. We're also going to talk to working people who have a fascination with the paranormal industry. Because I think that is our group. You know what I mean? That's your group. That's my group. Those are our audiences. People who are working Monday through Friday at a Kroger. And then, you know, Friday, Saturday, they're investigating, you know, somewhere down right. the street. Right. So, I mean, that's, you know, or they're working in a dental office. And then Saturday and Sunday, they're psychics at a convention of some sort. So that's our audience. That's your audience. It's mine. And I think that's what we need to have this season. Last season, we read for Jennifer Lopez's cousin. Last season, we read for Elizabeth Saint, which I've read for Elizabeth for a few years now. And then they're notable people. They have celebrity, especially Elizabeth, far more than far less, I should say, than she deserves, because that chick is amazing. But, you know, there's a level of celebrity there. This year, not so much. We're going to just stick to everyday people who are our core audience, who will connect with what we're talking about. So I love it. I can't wait. I cannot wait until this is done. Like, I'll be so happy when it's all said and done. And my date to be finished is September the 8th, and the phone is turned off, kids. There's not going to be anybody talking to Ken Bogle September the 8th. He's going to film the 6th and 7th, and then he will be gone. I may be gone to the 12th. I don't know yet. I'm just going to take a huge break. Maybe I will go to Betty Ford. We'll see.
I see a road trip in your future.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. For some reason, I don't think Betty Ford has a room for or a wing for overused
psychics,
you know, like burnt out psychics.
Where's Chip Cobbing? I'll go where Chip.
That's a great question. Put that down, Dave. Say, we're gonna.
Have, yeah,
we're,
I will.
We're
gonna, yeah, we'll we're ask gonna him ask next. Chip that we're question. Gonna ask Chip here in a couple of weeks when we talk to him.
So. We were talking before, and I think that this brings up a really good just topic of a discussion, even though we only have like 12 minutes. But we were talking before the show about the filming of this season and what you wanted to do. And the reason why I want to bring this up is I think that it goes to... kind of the difference between believers and non-believers and people who are into the paranormal and people who are not into the paranormal, and maybe even the societal perception of what the paranormal is. But why don't you tell everyone kind of, if you can, the idea you had, which I think was awesome, and kind of what happened with that.
Well, the idea was that this year we were going to go to a local university, and the students of the filming department were going to earn real life experience, real credits in the industry by working on our show. Not just that, they were also going to get to experience cameras that they don't currently have access to. You know, this local university only had 720, you know, this, I don't really, pixelated sort of a thing. Now everything's being done in 1080 and 4K and these sorts of things. And the students had no access to that. So the network VidiSpace was going to bring that into the department and help kids hands-on experience with this new tech. The VidiSpace network was also going to donate a reasonably large sum of money to the department. And, you know, just as a gift, so that the students could actually buy some of these cameras, you know what I mean? Like, and get that. And they were going to earn their credit for the course. This was going to be what they were going to do for this semester, was going to be filming, editing, and working on Tarot Day with Ken Bogle. And the new dean of that university came in. I don't know her name, thank God, because it would be all over Twitter. I would already have had, you should have seen me Friday. I was a mess. I was preaching funerals. She came in and she said, absolutely not. This is not going to happen. Forget about it. She put the kibosh to the whole thing. So with less than a month to spare, because it has to be filmed in the 6th and 7th, but we were going to start the production of it the 27th of August. I now have in a position, this person and whatever their beliefs are, I have no idea, or whatever their fears were based. I have no idea why they decided they weren't going to do it. I have no idea, but it left us without a location. It left us without, you know, a crew. And, it also really damaged, the curriculum for what was going to be this semester for those students. The people working in that department are just dumbfounded. One of the girls said to me, I don't know what my students will do now to earn their diplomas and to get real world experience. I don't know what my students will do. So it was just, it was heartbreaking, and it's been really, it's a huge setback. And I've been devastated for a couple of days over it. But yeah, I think to your point, I think it had something to do with the taboo nature of what tarot is and how people don't understand it and yet they're afraid of it. And I think the fear of judgment, in that kind of a closed-minded thing is what led to the breakdown of that situation. So it's been hard. That's a difficult thing to have to swallow.
I empathize with you 1,000,000%.
But why would you take real world experience away, educational moments on the job? This is going to be on Amazon Prime. Your university is going to be on Amazon Prime. These kids are learning how to do things and end up on Amazon. And eventually there are other platforms I can't even talk about right now that this was going to end up on. You ruined. And then I had local news all over it. Different news channels were going to be all over. The newspaper was going to be all over it. This is going to be all free publicity for the department. And this dean said, no. I'm like, she's, you know, I don't know what her name is, but she's a real idiot. Like, I have no idea what her name is, but she's a fool. She's a fool. Yeah, I'm dumbfounded by it.
I think, and I remember back, because this seems almost exactly like what happened at the Stanley Hotel. I mean, they've been known as, you know, one of the most haunted, hotels, if not locations, in the entire United States.
Yeah, kick it out.
And they have been for years. But then all of a sudden they put out a statement saying that upper management felt that they were losing out on corporate retreats and corporate people coming in, and so they were canceling all of the paranormal stuff going on because they didn't want to be associated with that anymore. Do you believe that maybe this dean, whereas the opportunity you gave these kids in this department was a phenomenal offer and opportunity for them, and all the publicity and whatnot, do you think that maybe does this dean looked at it and be like, I don't want to be associated with the paranormal. I don't care what, the opportunity these kids are going to have or whatnot for money's sake and for the reputation of this university. I don't want it to be associated with the paranormal. Do you think that might have had something to do with it?
I totally do. I mean, this is Kentucky. I'm gonna lose it. This is Kentucky, and the level.
Sorry, Ken.
You're in the Bible Belt. I mean, Kentucky's known to be the Baptist Bible Belt, right?
It's the gateway to the South, but it's also the gateway to ignorance, because they'd rather judge something that. And now here we go. They'd rather judge something based on their fear and their ignorance of it than actually be a part of it. So. If they had had a moment where they'd actually seen an episode where I talked to somebody and helped them through a place where I brought them to a greater spirituality, they would see they would have had the Christian support. You know, if they had seen a place where I have helped someone deal with self-harm, they would see that we have mental health issues that we balance and deal. That I've helped people come back from alcoholism and drug addiction and abusive situations. They would have seen the cathartic, therapeutic value, and it would have done a tremendous amount. But no. They'd rather be afraid. And it's, I said Kentucky only, but I think it is a huge population of the world. I think it is a massive population. That's why the paranormal industry is a little tiny fragment of the world, is because of that fear. And it's, the end result, though, is like you said, it was just, it robbed the students, you know, it robbed the students. And I think anytime that your ignorance and paranoia and fear and your greed, even though we were going to give a major donation to the department, I think anytime that you do that, the students should be able to come to you and say, wait a minute, why did I choose your college?
I agree.
You know, I think the students should get to say, wait a minute, why are we here?
Right.
Is it just so we can produce more videos for campus, you know, or can I get some real world experience and credit here? So Elizabeth and I have been talking about it. And what we think we're going to do is I think we're going to contact the students individually. We're going to see if they want to go to the location that Elizabeth and I are working on, which BTW is amazing. if I get this location, God, please give me this location. If I get this location, it's going to be like the most beautiful thing on Vidi Space. It is going to be the most beautiful thing on Vidi Space. And if I can get the production team behind me, you know, and with Nick and Elizabeth overseeing it, it's going to be the most flawless show produced by Vidi. And it's going to be worth every single bit of the trouble. It's going to be worth all the effort. You know, through great suffering comes terrific art. So let's make something beautiful and great. And then we will remember this time. And when we write the book, we will talk about this.
Yeah.
And we'll say, you know, this dean at this school really made a mistake. But thank you so much, because now we've all got this amazing amount of, you know, work, this amazing amount of work from it. So we'll see. But I think where we're heading now, if I could just get it all pieced together, is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And there, we may be filming in a castle. That's all I'm saying. We may be filming in a castle. So we'll see what happens.
Wow. You just cannot keep it in.
No, he can.
You are bursting at the seams to try to tell people. I love
the alliteration of almost. Ken Boggle in a castle. I think that's just genius. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, at least I know I can buy these people off. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can buy these are doctors and lawyers who own this location. I can buy those suckers off. You know what I mean? Like, that's no problem. You know what I mean? So we'll totally see. And they seem eager to have people come to their location, and they seem eager to have people visit their castle. And it's got a bit of history to it. So I'm like, this is probably going to be even better than being in a blacked out studio, you know? So Elizabeth and I are working on that this week, and then we'll have some ideas.
That castle's not in Missouri, is it?
No.
Okay. You thought right, I was just trying, huh?
Some level of secrecy. I have some level.
Preston's in Cali, but I just was, yeah.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah. My apologies.
There's a major, major beautiful location in Missouri, though, that...
there is. I know which one you're talking about. I've looked into it. I can't remember what its name is. Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for tonight, unfortunately, because I really love talking with you, Ken. Thank you. Thank you for coming on again. Appreciate it. And now my popularity on Twitter will go back to the way it is. No, nothing at all. Till next time. Maybe we'll book you for next week.
All right, okay. Thank you all for having me on. You have a good one.
Night, Ken.
Thank you.
Good night.
All right. Like I said, that does it for Dave and I. And, everybody have yourselves a good night.
Till next week.